to the FTN Show.
Hey everybody, welcome to Forge Narrative. My name is Paul Murphy, your host. I'm joined by Chris Morgan and Ricky Addington.
R.I.P. Lucifer Engines.
Hello.
You hear that sound? You hear the sound? That is the sound of the smallest violin playing. Yanari are no longer what they used to be.
I keep trying to find someone sad about this. I don't know that person. You know what's funny is every time I played against Yanari in a tournament, my opponent apologized because they knew. They're like, yeah, so this is going to happen. You know,
we are the Battle of Lost Souls podcast. Going to be going over the White Dwarf update for the index entry for Yanari. And there are some big changes in here. Strength from death is no longer the option of just fighting or shooting again or whatever. You basically always fight first in the fight phase while you're under the effect. And while you're benefiting from soul burst actions, you also add one to hit rolls for melee weapons. And you're going to notice that if we do happen to get to all the stuff that's in here, which we probably won't get to everything that's in here, but everything has, most things are an emphasis on the melee. It gives you a buff to melee type stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I thought that's all the show existed to talk about was just how to do melee combat.
Well, let's be honest. I don't care how good shooting is. You always want to charge. Even when I played Tau, I always had that conversation with myself. Should I charge right now? I know the answer is no, but I don't want to skip a whole phase of the game. You know what I'm saying?
Like, yeah, why would
I want
you,
in there. Right? I want so, in there. You know, if we weren't meant to use that phase of the game, they wouldn't have made it.
Yeah, you wouldn't have an attack stat.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I got an attack stat. So
you definitely do. So the things you lose your Craft World Harlequin and Drukhari. Keyword, you pick up Yanari. You become a Yanari detachment. You know, there's that. That's going to come into play here in just a minute when we start talking about some of the changes. And I want to hit the highlights. I believe the Yvrain and Yinkarn are the same points as they are in the index, but the Vizark is 120 points. What's he in the index, Chris?
141.
I don't have it in front of me whether if he got an update in chapter approved or not, but at least in this White Dwarf, he's 120 points. Probably still the weakest of the three.
And does his sword still do that weird, like, damages your leadership just for a turn thing?
Yeah. You do. Yeah, subtract one from the leadership characteristic until the end of the turn. He can take wounds that Yvrain does, but I just don't see you taking him, and Yvrain. I don't know. I think they kind of perform probably a similar combat role, you know, plus or minus an attack, an AP, but, you know, still the same. I don't know if you're going to be relying on that guy to do your damage. The Incarn still has his summoned by death rule, and this is one that throws people off. A lot of each time a unit is destroyed, you can immediately remove the Incarn from the battlefield and set it up again as close as possible to the position of that unit more than 1 inch from all enemy models. The Incarn may not charge in a turn it's set up in this manner. And you'll notice that it's just anytime a model or a unit dies, you can throw the Incarn over there, even if it's all the way across the table. So it's kind of a gotcha move when you're not expecting it. You have to kind of be careful where you kill stuff. I don't know. Anytime you're having to think about that, in addition just to trying to get your kill objective for that round, it's another layer where you can possibly make a mistake.
Can he not heroically intervene, though, during the charge phase?
In your opponent's charge phase. He's a character, so yeah, he can.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, you remember, you can only heroically intervene. I know you know this, Ricky, but you can only heroically intervene in your opponent's charge phase.
Yeah, I was just thinking that's something like you go... character dies and it, so he can do that to like an enemy character, right? Like, or if an enemy model dies, he can be placed near an enemy model, or is it just when one of your guys dies?
It's any model die, or any unit
so
dies.
So you can kill a unit, jump him right over there 1 inch away, and then when it's their turn, if they don't move off of that objective or something, all of a sudden they're getting heroically intervened
with a six attack beat stick.
Yeah, that's kind of scary.
His weapon's no joke. He's AP neg 4 with D6 damage. He's only strength 6, but he can reroll his wound rolls.
Yeah, that's still pretty darn good.
Yeah, yeah, agreed. 4 plus invulnerable save. I mean, I like it.
I love the idea of him just like Bugs Bunnying across the table, you know, just like popping out of the ground. Hey, here I am, and this guy's dead, and now you're about to be. I mean, it can really mess people up.
Yeah.
We talk about becoming the Yanari... keyword, you lose your Eldari or whatever. And so things like a hemlock, where you can take things from across the codexes, from all the Eldari type codexes, you know, you apply the Yanari keyword to it and it loses its other ones. And then it goes on to say in the Revenant discipline is no longer just three powers, it's a full six power psychic tree. Word of the Phoenix is completely different. There is no more fire twice power at all in here. But that's not the interesting thing I want to talk about. This says that Yanari psychers must generate powers from the Revenant discipline instead of from the Runes of Battle, Runes of Fate, or the Phantasmancy disciplines. Why is that interesting? Because the Hemlocks get the negative power from the Runes of Battle. And this says this replaces that. They must choose from this. And there's a power on here called the Shield of Yanid, or Yaniad. This power, charge value of 7, if manifested until your next psychic phase, friendly Yanari units have a 5+ invulnerable save whilst they are within 6 inches of the psyker. So if you're running your 5 planes, you're scooting them in tight formation across the table, that one in the middle could buff everybody around him with a 5+ invulnerable save.
Not insignificant.
There's some here that gives that dishes out mortal wounds. Still got the Gaze of Yanniad, Storm of Whispers. If manifested, roll 3d6 for each enemy unit within 6 inches of the psyker. For each result of a 6, that unit being rolled for suffers 1 mortal wound.
And it was how many d6 did you roll again?
3d6. So, I mean, unlikely, but it's one of those things that it says each enemy unit within 6 inches of the psyker. So you could technically be close to several units. Pop this off, and it's a little bubble effect. What do you need? You need to be near two units to get 1 mortal wound.
Yeah, that's a no for me, dog.
Yeah, that's fair. There's some other things in here you can buff up. You can debuff an enemy unit to allow things to reroll wounds for the melee weapons. So you know there's play in that. I can see a big synergy with Harlequins, things that already getting in melee. And heck, maybe striking scorpions could potentially be of use. I'm not suggesting striking scorpions, and I'm not suggesting Howling Banshees either. But these are things that I don't think had a place really in a competitive list. But with such a heavy focus on melee buffing, maybe those Eldar melee units can kind of come into play.
Any excuse to play Striking Scorpions, I'm down. Because that was, 20 years ago? Golly, I don't even want to think of how long.
When I first unit, yeah?
Yeah, when I first started getting into Warhammer and I started learning about the Eldar, I just thought the Striking Scorpions were just the coolest. What is it, the Mandiblasters or whatever on their helmets? Just, I don't know, something about them. I just thought they were just the coolest thing ever.
There's a stratagem called the Shrine of the Whispering God. This allows you to put Strength from Death on the Incubi, up to 3 units of Incubi. So that's another melee unit that would not, you wouldn't normally see, but you're going to get some extra benefit from them. So here's another, some things that have been changed in this is that the Warlord traits, you now get a full tree of Warlord traits. I would assume that you could still take things from the main rulebook if you wanted to, outside of name character stuff. The Warlord full tree, one of them is the Lord of Rebirth. The Warlord regains 1 lost wound at the start of each battle round. In addition, each time the Warlord would lose a wound, roll a d6. On a 5+, that wound is not lost.
So a 5+, feel no pain, and you heal 1 every turn.
Yeah.
That's solid.
Yeah. The Yavrain has the Favored of Yanniad, and that is each time the Warlord piles in or consolidates, they can move up to 6 inches instead of 3.
I love that. It's like, Harlequins get that with one of their traits, lets them do that. And you don't always need it, but there are those times where it is so clutch to be able to just get over there and lock another unit into combat, especially vehicles and stuff like that. Super useful.
Yeah, that's a good point. Scooting over and then when get to lock things, basically to make them to where they've got tie up something when they thought they were safe. That's one of those things you want to ask your opponents. We were talking in that last week in this segment with Jim is how do you tactfully ask your opponent what their tricks are?
Yeah, that's tough. Yeah, it's tough because it's
What do you what do you as a player, and as a sportsman, as a gamesmanship, what are you obliged to say? And but one of those questions could be, do you have anything that allows you to consolidate more than 3 inches?
Yeah, absolutely. It's it's one of those things where it's. I mess with one of my buddies because he's like, what's the range on your weapons? I'm like, 18 inches. I was like, but don't forget the vehicle moves this far. You know, it's like, don't forget that, you know, but in a tournament, if they ask me the range of my weapons, I might just say, all right, it's an 18 inch range.
Yeah,
but
I think that's a fine answer. And I don't think that most of the time that you would be trying to shroud what your answer was, but how do they ask, you know, What's the total move on that thing? What's the range?
Yeah, and it's you can really go down a path on that, right? When you start trying to have
those
conversations.
Is that an Eldar joke, Ricky?
Let's pretend it was, and that I am that witty. but I had a game one time, and I asked my opponent, I thought he and I had a pretty good rapport, and I was like, okay, what does this list do? But and he's like, well, I'm not going to tell you everything my list does. Then I'm just telling you how I'm going to beat you. And I'm like, okay, well, in that case, give me 5 minutes and let me look over everything in your list so that I know. Or you could have just told me what your list did and saved us the trouble.
But I think you should ask the right questions. I mean, yeah. You're right. He shouldn't be like, well, on turn two, I'm going to pop this stratagem and I'm going to be, that's a bridge too far.
Yeah, but just give me the gist of kind of what, I don't like gotcha hammer. I like to let my opponents know, hey, you know, these units do this, these units do this. Hey, let's have let's have a good game.
This is a fast moving unit over here. This unit has, plasma guns or something. I mean, that's you can start that dialogue and then kind of let your questions organically develop. But if you don't ask, do you have anything that it consolidates 6 inches? I'm probably not going to tell you that.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not going to volunteer that. And not because I'm even trying to shroud things either, is that I'm not just not going to be getting into my plan with you, you know, while we're at a critical phase of the game.
Yeah. That's right. I think that's an important one to ask your opponent, though. If you're going to go down your laundry list of questions to ask them, it's like, you know, is there anything that can deploy, closer to me than 9 inches or anything crazy like Gene Stealer Colts coming in and basically auto charging or consolidating 6 inches, all those little things that are like just big giant red flags. Those are good things to ask, which means. Those are good abilities to have in your unit, which is why I like that warlord trait.
yeah, absolutely. It's. I think I'd like to have a little bit of the survivability, but thankfully the Yunari get a ton of stratagems, and some of them are included. Is getting a, you know, you could spend a command point and give somebody another warlord trait if you wanted to spread some of that love around.
Nice.
Yeah.
Let me interrupt. It can't be the same warlord trait, I'm assuming.
Oh no! All the warlord traits in your army must be different. Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's like a.
I'm pretty sure that's some wording that's across in all the board, right? Yeah. I just wanted to make sure because you know, so far I like both of those, and I could definitely see using those more than once.
There are some stratagems in here that give similar effects to things you might see in the Yunari or Craftworlds Codex, But they're specifically like Yunari stratagems. So Deadly Misdirection uses stratagem. When a Yunari unit from your army falls back, the unit can still shoot and charge this turn.
It's very Harlequin of them.
Yep. And then there's Lightning Fast Reactions. You know, you can't burn these twice, you know, because they have a similar effect. I think that's in the most recent FAQ is that if it has the same name, it's considered the same stratagem.
Yeah, I think so. From a Blood Angel stratagem and a Dark Angel stratagem that are both...
Can I burn Veterans of the Long War 3 times?
Right.
And the answer is no. but you get what I'm saying. There's a lot of... The good ones, the good stratagems outside of what I would consider signature things, like there's no Agents of Vect in here. But some of the utility ones that you would expect to get from your kind of crafty space elves, they're in this book. Fire and Fade, Lightning Fast Reactions, that kind of stuff. I do like it. I think I would feel better about this if I didn't know that my Dark Reapers will never shoot twice again. But
Nothing makes me happier than to hear that. Oh my gosh.
I mean, things like Shining Spears, which are a deadly unit that could kill 4 or 5 units a turn, you know, in the right situations. You know, they've taken a significant hit as well. I think they're still really good, though, because there is such an emphasis on the melee stuff and getting in close. But they at least won't be able to fight twice, you know, or fight, launch an assault again. So those...
Yeah, Shining Spears are going to be a factor again, I think, just because we can now charge over units in the charge phase again. We'll see them back.
Yeah, the rules team giveth and taketh away, or taketh away and giveth, as the case may be. There are some, you know, the relic, they got a full list of relics in here. You know, it's same template as some of the other stuff. Got some fighty stuff, got some defense stuff. One really nice one that I like is called the Lost Shroud. All damage suffered by the bearer is halved, rounding up. In addition, roll 1d6 each time this model loses a wound. On a 5+, the wound is not lost.
That's good.
Yeah. I mean,
that makes a dude tough.
Yeah. I mean, when you're looking at what is an Autarch on a bike? A 5-wound character?
Mm-hmm.
You know, anytime you can save a wound, not spend a wound, does some damage. I mean, think about this. A guy rolls a 6 with his melted gun, taking 3 points.
Yeah.
And then you might save some of those on a 5+. So actually, you're really, on average, taking 2. That's taking a melted gun full on to the face. And that's if you didn't get your 4+ invulnerable save to block it. So on average, you're taking 1 point of damage from a melted gun full on to the face.
Basically, what it means is that a skinny stick figure on a carrot is more durable than your large tanks.
Don't think about that. All right, let's just think about it as, hey, yay!
He has hundreds of years of experience and grace.
Yeah,
and like, I guess he's found the shroud. It should be the found shroud.
He can duck behind a piece of something where the tank can't.
This white dwarf is chock full of painting tutorials. It's like the first glimpse of the new Sigmar scenery that's coming out. And then a bunch of kitbashes. There are some really nice kitbashes of Blood Angels in here. So this is an excellent issue of White Dwarf to pick up if you're not already a subscriber.
I love that little kitbash section. You know, it's like we've been kitbashing for years and everything, right? But it's like it's so fun to see it when White Dwarf is like throwing in little tips on how to kitbash. And those... was it Inceptors in there? The Blood Angels Inceptors with the wings? That was worth the price of the White Dwarf just to see those. Those things look awesome.
Yeah, there are probably, 7, 8 Blood Angel Kitbash models in here.
Yeah, the Death Watch ones, the Primaris Death Watch Kitbashes in that thing. Awesome.
Yeah, I love even just some of the simple weapon swaps. You know, like Emperor Spears was a lieutenant or something in here. Yeah, I mean, this is a good one. And then the painting tutorials are top-notch. I mean, it really does go step-by-step. And it's nice to see the colors there and how they use them. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back. I want to talk a little bit about the tournament series, Armageddon series. And then we're actually going to talk about Dark Angels.
Finally.
All right, see you in a minute.
FTN is brought to you by Discount Games Inc. Please visit them at www.discountgamesinc.com. And don't forget to ask Jay about ways to save even more on your hobby projects.
We are back. You heard me right. We are going to talk about Dark Angels in just a minute.
This is the day, guys. It's a good day.
Armageddon series in full effect. I actually put up an article on ForgeNarrative.net that gives a brief description of what it is in the article section. You go to the main homepage. That homepage is my hobby wall. Click on articles, and then you'll see the Armageddon series logo, and then you can click in there and see a little bit about the description of how the points are awarded. But the Battle for the Peak was this past weekend. I don't want to spoil anything. I'm going to have one of the organizers on, and that talk will probably be on next week's episode. But we'll talk about who won, the players to watch, what kind of stuff went on, how the tournament was organized, because it was actually organized fairly quickly and still got up to the status that it did. And it's the first opportunity for people to earn points in the Armageddon series. And that's a series of tournaments, basically a tournament league. Kind of similar to how you're doing your store league, Ricky.
Yeah.
But I think it's an interesting way for players to compete, gain points, track their progress, and create some rivalries. We're going to be talking about the individual players themselves. We're going to be talking about their list, their approach to the game, and I may even put out some bounties on players. We'll see.
That'd be great. You know,
I love bounties.
Yeah. My favorite thing about running leagues has kind of come to fruition. We just had our largest store tournament we've ever had this past Saturday. The points, the way the points are standing right now in our Tryhards Cup, the top two players, the top two are tied right now, and one of them is playing Chaos Space Marines, and the other is playing Sisters of Battle. And so, a Sisters of Battle player is right now tied for the lead, just because he has made it to every single event.
That's okay.
And so that's the fun thing about these about leagues is, you know, you don't have to win them, but if you place well and you attend as many as you can, you know, you're up there, you're in it, and it's always really neat to kind of see that. So it's fun to see how these like standings and these how league standings fluctuate after each tournament. It's always fun to watch.
If anybody's interested in the scoring spreadsheet that we have for the Armageddon series for their own leagues, happy to send it to you. No issues at all. How this is going to work for the series is there are four tournaments. It's Battle for the Peak, Master City 40K tournament coming up in June 22nd. That is a five-round, one-day grand tournament. /major if it gets that far.
The one-day five-rounders are brutal.
It's a grind. The Crucible in Florida, and then the Coastal Assault also in Florida. And then going to take the top three scores. So this also allows the organizers of said events to be able to compete in the series and go to these other events as well. At the end of the series in November, going to award some awesome prizes. It's going to be a medal, going to be some shout-outs. Probably some other things along the way. Might try to see if someone, you know, wants to sponsor a prize along the way for the series, and, you know, more to come. I think it's going to be a fun kind of dive into the tournament culture, really kind of getting in the scenes, the minds of some of these players, and also building up some of the gamesmanship between them.
And I think more than anything in the world is that this Master City is five rounds, one day, in a brewery.
Like, I don't know how I'm getting out of there. I don't know.
No, you're not. It makes
people
me want to go
sleeping
to it
under the tables.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
At the end of the
inflatable mattress under the table. Go. That's going to be my plan.
So the requirements also for this season are ITC scoring, ITC scored tournaments with ITC missions, and the tiebreaker, if there is a tie for this series, is going to be the individual's ITC placement. I don't know that there will be a tie, but I just figure we might as well have something. And since these are all ITC tournaments, which we certainly support involvement in the ITC system, that would be a great tiebreaker to have.
Works for me.
Yeah, but also build some anticipation. See how folks do at the LVO if there happens to be a tie. But we'll see. In line with the IGC stuff, we've been having some faction-focused discussions. You know, we had a pretty extended talk on Grey Knights, and then, like, coincidentally, Grey Knights actually won a grand tournament down in Australia.
Oh my gosh, it happened!
I mean, not our doing, I promise you that.
No, God, no. No. Zach, tell me he took all Terminators. Just because we were saying, no, I don't think Terminators. Tell me the guy.
It's Terminators, took all Terminators and Land Raiders. I mean, it's something you wouldn't.
This is a good example of correlation, not necessarily meaning causation.
Exactly, yeah.
You know, look, I mean, sometimes it's any given Sunday. Sometimes it's luck of the dice. Sometimes it's just the immense skill of players. And I'm happy to concede to any one of those points. But really, the fact of the matter is that this is we're doing some of this faction focused stuff because of some of the changes in single faction. You know, how people will be competing with a single faction.
It's because it's the most fun way to play.
Hey, I'm no judgments. I also like playing single faction. I sometimes don't out of, you know, what I would consider necessity. The necessity to run the Super Friends. That is. the necessity to try to win four out of my five games. You know, I don't know.
Yeah.
Really what I'm saying is, you know, there's no, in my opinion, right or wrong way to play, but this is certainly something that people take a lot of pride in and will be competing for. And there are even certain events out there that award best faction, you know, of this. And so if you are playing in a competitive, you know, faction bucket, then you're going to want, you know, some tips. And if you are, you know, maybe there's three Dark Angel players at a 100-person event, you know, why not? Let's talk about how to get those guys above the curve, you know, above the hump. And then with the Grey Knight episode, I'm sure we're going to get similar comments on the Dark Angel stuff. We got a lot of resistance. I should say resistance, a lot of counterpoints to some of the suggestions that we made for Grey Knights. And then my counterpoint to that is the win percentage for Grey Knights in general may mean that they're not correct. It may mean that they've evolved past what we've said, and that's what's going to be creeping the win percentage up. So I don't know where we're coming in the life cycle of this, but we do want to start a dialogue, and we love hearing from players that have different opinions or what's working for them in their area. So keep it coming. Happy to hear all this stuff.
Yeah, 100%. Absolutely. And even just having, you know, us talking about Grey Knights and then having people come back and saying, hey, why don't y'all just pull the Dreadnoughts out, and forcing us to think about that and having those conversations. I went back to my buddy and I told him, I said, build me a list with one Dreadnought. And he come back with like some really fun lists that had all this other crap in it because like he wasn't taking those mandatory Dreadnoughts, right? So just getting the conversation started about thinking and thinking about things in different ways has actually been a lot of fun for us. So
yeah, keep it coming. And Ricky, I'll do a little bragging for you right now. Number three Dark Angel player in the world.
Yeah, there must not be many other ones out there. So somehow I'm sitting in third. I have no idea how, but
you are a longtime Dark Angel player. I mean, I think that's really, if you had, you know, your druthers, you need to be playing Knights or Dark Angels all the time.
Oh yeah. Yeah. 100%. That's kind of my thing. Every now and then I pull my Harlequins out and play them. But, if I'm traveling somewhere, it's usually with Dark Angels. Yeah.
So what has been working for you in the Dark Angels? What's the last list that you took?
Okay. So to Adepticon, so my list is typically, and it, bear in mind that I try to stick to kind of a theme, and I've been really just trying to go with Primaris, you know, majority Primaris. So what I run is Azrael, Primaris Lieutenant, 3 5-man Intercessor squads, a 6-man Aggressor squad, 10 Hellblasters, and then, let's see here, a Primaris Ancient, Primaris Apothecary, and then from there, I go over into the Raven Wing. So 7-man Raven Wing, Black Knights, a Dark Talon, and a Dark Shroud with Samael following around those guys. That's been my tournament list for a while now. And there's some changes coming in that, but that's pretty much my go-to Dark Angels list.
Well, you mentioned some changes. Is that in response to what you feel like are kind of some shortcomings within the game? Or are these just an evolution because
it's, I think a lot of it is, different? Yeah, a lot of it is just wanting to play something different. And then some of it is, you know, some of it is just flat out, I'm wanting to go more towards a pure Primaris list just to see what I can do with that. But some of it is due to, you know, the Dark Talon went back up to 200 points, was still pretty good with the Beta Bolter rule. Now that the Bolter rule has been tweaked to disallow the rapid fire at full range for vehicles, that's made the Dark Talon less attractive. So
that's coming out, is it what you're saying?
Yeah, he's coming out. As much as I love it, he's coming out. The Dark Shroud is probably going to come out, mainly because he rarely survives past turn one anyway, because it's like, oh wait, your whole army is -1 to hit. Okay, what gives you that? Oh, that, it's gone. All right, here. I think most Dark Angels lists should have a Dark Shroud in them. I'm just trying to try something.
Do they still debuff or give a benefit to units around them? What's their deal?
Yeah, so the Dark Shroud is -1 to hit any Dark Angels unit within 6 inches of it. So as long as a model from that unit is within 6 inches of the Dark Shroud, it's -1 to hit it. It's fantastic. It's, you know, it flies. It's got a heavy bolter on it, base or an assault cannon. It's solid. Also, everyone forgets about it, but it's got 3 attacks. I think it's 3 attacks. And it hits on 3+. It's a vehicle, but it hits on 3+ in combat. So I have been known to charge that thing in on stuff for no reason other than to, you know, put some. I think I charged a. I'm not proud of this, but against Justin Pizzoferrato, I charged a Harlequin Solitaire with a Dark Shroud. It didn't go well, but
gets he a free had movement. You could contest an objective. You know,
yeah, he had one moon left. I was trying to get it off. That was one of my worst games ever. But
it didn't work. It didn't. Are you telling me it didn't work? But you tried. But you tried it.
Had to try it. Like, my MVPs, right now, I think the MVPs for Dark Angels have got to be the Ravenwing Black Knights. As much as I love the Primaris, I am very hesitant to take the Black Knights out of the list.
But, I mean, can I talk about let's talk about the Black Knights. I'm sorry to say, but how are you equipping them, and why are they the MVPs?
So they really only come one way, right? I mean, you can change out the Corvus hammers on some stuff, but really it's Ravenwing Black Knights are, you know, they have the 18-inch range plasma talons. So it's 18-inch plasma gun, assault. It's assault too. So you're getting two shots at 18 inches. The bikes move 14 inches, and if they turbo boost, they get a 4-up invul, and they move 20 inches. So you can move 20 inches and fire at neg 1 because they're assault, but Dark Angels have Speed of the Raven. It's a one command point stratagem that lets you turbo boost, or it lets you advance and shoot at full ballistic skill. Shoot and charge at full ballistic skill. So turn 1, my Black Knights are coming 20 inches across the table, shooting at full ballistic skill, usually with weapons of the Dark Age, and supercharging, which is going to give them, my 7 bikes are going to have 14 strength 8 AP minus 3, 3 damage shots. And then
that sounds pretty good. Hey, that damage 3, that kills a lot of Terminators. I mean, we're seeing more and more Terminators creep their way into the list.
Yeah, and it's, you know, most Terminators are 2 wounds, right? So that's going to get them. But, you know, and then Paladins, stuff like that, that has 3 wounds, they're going to kill that, right? And then the thing is, a lot of times that 3 damage may be overkill, but sometimes they'll have like a feel no pain or something like that.
Yes, and not with feel no pain, that's for sure.
Yeah, and that's what definitely helps get damage through there and kill models. It's just super fast. It's really hard for your opponent to hide that important unit from a Black Knight squad. The problem is that Black Knights get out there and they're usually kind of left out there hanging. But right now, what you can do is you can take the Raven. You can, if you have your Black Knights put into their own detachment, like I do. I've got Semi-El, the Black Knights, the Dark Shroud, and what's my other fast attack in there? Not thinking of what it is, but anyway, put them in their own detachment. You take the Ravenwing attack squadron, and then you make that. You pay the stratagem or the command point to make it the attack squadron, and it gives you. It gives you the Swift Strike stratagem. So you can actually turn 1, charge it across the table, shoot something, and then you can charge whatever's right there in front of you, swing on it, and then pay 2 command points, and you can immediately move and advance. So they can move 20 inches back before your opponent even gets to swing. So as soon as they fight, they resolve their attacks, and then before your opponent attacks, you pay 2 command points and then move 20 inches away from them. Usually try to find something out of line of sight, so it protects your Black Knights. They're super fast. They kill basically whatever you point them at, and then they are survivable by basically doing a hit and run. They're just too good right now to not have them in your list, I think.
You mentioned the Primaris Space Marine. I know that's your thing, but I mean, do you really not feel that scouts would just be better in the role of your troop slots?
Oh no, I think scouts probably would, honestly. Scouts, one shortcoming I know that I have is that my list is susceptible to like Gene Stealer cults coming in right there and locking up my dudes. So scouts would be good. The new what's the Phobos armor guys called? I cannot think of them right off the top of my head. I've been looking at putting those in there to kind of do the same thing as the scouts. Yes, they would be good. They would absolutely be better than my intercessors.
Well, to talk myself out of the point is that dark. To me, I found that the Primaris troop guys with the 2 wounds really wilted to Dark Reaper fire.
Yeah, fortunately. We're not seeing as many.
Well, we'll see way less now, I think, than before.
Yeah. So those units out there that are hitting intercessors with multi damage, yeah, that's a problem. But I've got a lot of mileage out of that 30-inch bolter shot, especially if they don't move. And if you remember when the Codex first came out, I was not a fan of Grim Resolve. Like I just hated it because I was always moving. But I've noticed lately, especially with the new bolter rule, is I'm planting those intercessors on objectives in the backfield. They've got a 30-inch range. They've got Grim Resolve. So they're sitting there shooting. My 5-man intercessors are pumping out 10 strength 4 AP minus 1 shots, rerolling ones to hit with Grim Resolve. And that is good.
By themselves, they don't need a character to buff them to do
that. Yeah, exactly. So, and you know, the most I'm ever losing to morale is one. That's not a big factor on those 5-man squads, but it's a huge factor on that 10-man Hellblaster squad, on that 6-man Aggressor squad. Stuff like that is huge. You're not scared with Dark Angels to have those big squads like you would be in other chapters, maybe. You can get more mileage out of that weapons from the Dark Age stratagem because I'm not scared to have that big 10-man Hellblaster squad. One thing I am doing right now, though, is I'm looking at taking out the Hellblasters for Inceptors because point for point, Inceptors, I think, are just better. Plasma Inceptors are just a better unit than Hellblasters.
Because of their drop capability? Let me say what.
Yes and no. One, I can leave them off the table if I think they're going to get shot up before I can do anything. They can get to the backfield, whereas my Hellblasters can't. But even if we take the Deep Strike out of the equation, what we end up with is a Toughness 5 versus Toughness 4, and we have assault weapons, 18 inches.
Yes, it's more shots too, right? I
mean, it's more shots, but you have fewer models, but more shots. So you feel it more when you lose one, but they're more mobile. They can't get locked into melee, and because they have a 10-inch move as opposed to 6-inch. So while Hellblasters are putting out with a 36-inch threat range, are putting out 10 shots until they get into, you know, 15 inches, then they're putting out 20 shots for 10 guys. But, you know, it's kind of hard to get those guys into 15 inches if they're walking across the table. So a lot of times those 10 Hellblasters are putting out 10 shots because they're moving 6 inches and shooting 30 inches. Well, Inceptors are moving 10 inches and shooting 18 inches. So they have a threat range of only 28 inches. But if they need to, they can advance and still shoot. So there's that benefit. But for the most part, they're getting more shots out at a little bit longer range than a Hellblaster will. And
when I take them in Blood Angels, I would often be able to snipe characters with them just incidentally. You know, when I could bring them in later in the game, and then inevitably a character is exposed. Yep. And they have the firepower to bring them down.
Yeah, yeah. And that's why where I've taken out all the Ravenwing, pretty much all of my Ravenwing in my list is getting replaced with Eliminators, and I'm almost embarrassed to say it, 12 Inceptors. I've got 6 Plasma Inceptors and 6 Heavy Bolter, or 6 Bolter Inceptors, right? Because I love the Bolter Inceptors because each one, I mean, a 3-man squad is shooting 18 strength 5 AP minus 1 shots.
So you're steering into the sniper meta.
I'm steering into the Ricky can never get into the backfield meta. they are going in there because I can never get anything into the backfield with my current list. I'm just too slow. The stuff I have that's fast, the Black Knights get shot off the table too quick, and the Dark Talon goes right after them. I want to try to be able to have those Inceptors to drop in later in the game to get on that stuff. But, you know, for the most part, when it comes to plasma, which is that's Dark Angel's big thing, is plasma with weapons of the Dark Age, and Inceptors are just going to pump out more shots for the points and be more mobile while doing it. You know, so I think they're just the way to go. Also, Eliminators. The new Eliminators are fantastic. I think they're great. I don't care what chapter you play, Eliminators are great. But in Dark Angels, I absolutely love Eliminators because of Grim Resolve. Because your snipers are going to be put somewhere where they're just going
to
have...
That's what I was talking about, steering into the sniper meta. You're going to be part of it.
Yes, I am finally going to have some snipers in my army. And just the fact that I can pop them down there, they're hitting on threes, rerolling ones, you know, because of Grim Resolve. And that's great. They're, what, 72 points or something bonkers like that? They're just so good. And there's something my list has not had. So it's going to be really fun to have that in there. And I think that'll bring some good utility to me. But yeah, for the most part, I mean, my Dark Angels list is everybody stay close to Azrael for your 4-up invul. Stay near the Dark Shroud for the -1 to hit. And then just reroll all your hit rolls and don't roll ones with your supercharged plasma.
Hey, yeah, sounds solid, right?
I mean,
it's foolproof.
It's not foolproof, but it's solid.
Well, how many command points do you think you need, and do you find yourself running out with what you're playing right now?
Yeah, I always need more. I always run out. My list has 9 command points. I get one for my specialist or one for my like fast attack detachment, 5 from my battalion, and then 1 from Azrael. Right? I'm always struggling with command points because I'm always using Speed of the Raven. There's almost every single turn, Speed of the Raven is getting used, and Weapons of the Dark Age is getting used every turn. So in ITC, that's going 6 turns, so that's 6 of them gone right there automatically for Weapons of the Dark Age. And then from there, it's whatever I have left.
Oh, awesome. Let's take a quick break, come back, and I'll read a few more reviews that we got, and then I'll talk about some, I'm trying to find another list that I really want. I'm going to get excited about playing and talking with buddies, you know, that kind of just throwing around ideas. I got something stuck in my head that I really want to experiment with, and I'll talk about it here in just a couple seconds.
Cool.
Sounds good.
We're sponsored by Firmaterra. With their study, lightweight and portable tables, you can make war anywhere. Please visit them at www.firmaterra.com.
We're back. Some of the reviews still, as we get 5-star reviews in iTunes or any of the other aggregators where I can see those things, and I really appreciate the people commenting. And then there's actually a couple of distributors out there, aggregators of podcasts, where people do post like comments and stuff, and I don't actually get those. I don't even know how I see them, but I've found them, and thank you, because every comment that you leave is another opportunity for someone to discover us and possibly, you know, like the show. So thanks for everyone that's doing that. So let me read a couple of these reviews. Pretty much planned. This is an iTunes. I pretty much planned my hobby time around this show because it's so entertaining. It keeps me coming BA every week. I think his phone also has the same affliction / red thirst that mine does.
The struggle is real.
I always enjoy this podcast. It was my gateway drug to 40K podcasts, and I'm eternally grateful. The host rapport and insights brighten my commute and my painting sessions. Man, that's really cool. That's exactly why we do this. So
I swear that review could have been written by me like a few years ago. Like like listening to the podcast is how I like got into all this stuff, really. And now somehow I ended up on the podcast. I don't know how that happened, but
conscripted. That's
yeah. Keep listening. You'll end up on here, I swear.
No joke, I'm one of the guys who's never heard of you guys. No problems. But I don't hang out with a bunch of 40K dudes and wouldn't have had anybody to tell him. He said, but he's listened to 3 shows and feels like he's in nerd heaven.
He's in good company.
Yeah, right. This is the kind of things that, I mean, this is what makes it all worth it. I mean, of course, those kind of comments is really what fuels us and keeps us going. So thanks for sending them in and continuing to leave those 5-star reviews, and we'll continue to read them.
I think that's what fuels you, Paul, but I'm going to be honest. When people walk up to me and hand me free Sour Patch Kids at tournaments, that's what fuels me. That's what makes it all worthwhile.
I'm cool with it. Yeah, I can get that. I can understand that.
I don't have to claim that on taxes, do I?
I don't think so.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't think so. No, but this is the kind of stuff, I mean, with this, you know, we've been doing this for a bunch of years, and I'm going to continue to do this and then continue to read the reviews as we get them in. So everyone who's playing along with that, thank you very much.
I've still got to go write my review, see if I can get it read on the air.
So tournaments, the last tournament I went to, I was really off my game. I even got like off my normal routine during a game so much that I got shook. Nothing, and it, just with the normal course of a game, playing in a game, I was against, it was even against Necrons. The guy was a great dude. Can't wait. You know, look, made plans to play him again. But during the course of that game, something like 8 to 11 destroyers came back to life.
Oh.
So just completely just took me out. You know, I'm starting to then I start to have flashbacks to the time that happened at Adepticon. And then I have flashbacks to the time, you know, I just let so much stuff creep into that game that I wasn't able to get my mind centered in it. And that's the kind of the stuff that we talk about a lot, is how to push past that. And most of the time I do, but I just couldn't then.
You just went into some sort of death spiral.
It was just so bad.
I'm going to be honest. I wish I could have been there to watch, because I would have just been drinking and laughing at you, like standing behind your opponent and just pointing at you and giggling.
Yeah.
As I watched you like just fall apart.
I said, and this is, I mean, nothing.
What are friends for?
Yeah.
Yeah. If not to heckle you in your time of need.
That's exactly right. And I deserved it. I mean, I mean, dude's over there playing a tight game. I wasn't playing a tight game. And then it degraded, you know what I mean? As I started to get frustrated with myself, not my opponent, or even that game. That's the thing, is that, you know, when you're trying to play at that level, the tournament level, the grand tournament major level, you know, any game, even a pickup game, you want to try to win. You want to try to be your best. You want to try to be your best, give the best experience you can to your opponent. And I wasn't accomplishing that. And it's really easier for me to look back on it now. I was shook.
I feel like you were so shook. Let me ask you this. Did you start like getting mad at like other stuff to the point where like you were just like mad at your wife inexplicably?
No,
you
know, it wasn't you're that just, bad.
Like, you just remembered something she did 15 years ago and you're like, oh yeah. And then just getting mad about that for no reason.
No, it wasn't that bad. Thankfully, there was no. I don't spiral like. At least I don't think I'm capable of spiraling like that. But you never know, right? Get all passive aggressive on pigeons, you know?
Yeah, I've probably been there.
I'm doing some aggressive driving back to the hotel. Or something. No. Thankfully, none of that. You know, I did just felt myself getting pulled away, and then after that game where, you know, thinking about like, oh man, what am I going to play next? Oh, I'm so terrible at 40K. My army sucks. That wasn't quite where I was at, but I've been playing. I didn't have anything new to take with me. So I took my Yunari Eldar stuff, and normally it does pretty well. Like it has a really impressive win record. But I felt like I was getting slowly detached from playing it because it was becoming somewhat routine. And then something like this happens and it's just like the perfect storm of self-doubt, but also turn it into inspiration. So what do? You go back and you start talking with your buddies and figuring out something that might put that spirit back in the game for you. And we started talking about different lists, and the subject of reserve points came up.
Mm.
Stick with me. I just heard like the collective clicks on the...
Wait, did I hear that right? Pass that by me one more time.
Reserve points. Well, okay.
What are those?
It's not even
what are those?
It's not necessarily an alien concept anymore because of like the assassins being able to summon in your utility assassin. But I'm gonna throw us all the way back to some sixth edition flashbacks of Pink Horrors.
Oh gosh, here we go. So I'm getting twitches, my eyes twitching, thinking about all the horrors.
Pink Horrors still have the ability to split into blue and then brimstone horrors. But you got to pay the points. When a model of the unit dies, before you remove the model, you put down the replacement models when it dies. And then you remove it from the table. The blue horrors, I believe, they're 5 points apiece. The brimstone horrors are 3 points apiece. So really, what I'm trying to do is figure out what the correct number of reserve points to put in the list is, that once someone starts shooting at my horrors and realizing what I'm doing, that they abandon shooting at the horrors, and then I get to summon in a Soul Grinder later.
So you're basically trying to bluff your way into a Soul Grinder.
Yes. late game Soul Grinder.
Yeah. I mean, it would probably work better were you not on a pretty well-known podcast telling the entire world what your plan is.
Well, but it's one of those things where if you're shooting at the pink horrors in cover, you know, this, I don't know, the cover's going to matter with their vulnerable save, but you're shooting at these things. And then when you start realizing that I'm creeping towards an objective with my placed models or whatever, that you might have no other choice but to abandon shooting at them, and I don't lose the unit. So you're not killing that unit. So you might waste some of your firepower shooting at that. And so you might not get your kill one. And I think fairly good insurance about you not getting a kill more in an ITC type mission.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember when those horrors come out, are they part of the same unit or do they become a different unit?
Same unit.
Same unit? I got aggressors. I'm going to risk it. I'm going to keep shooting at you.
You know, I guess it is possible that over the course of a full army shooting that you might be able to whittle through it. But, I'm thinking, and let me go to the horrors right now so we get the exact wording on the split here. So split, each time a pink horror is slain, you can add up to 2 blue horrors to its unit before you remove the slain model. Each time a blue horror is slain, you can add up to you can add 1 pair of brimstone horrors to its unit before you remove the slain model. This replacement model cannot be placed within 1 inch of an enemy model. Note that the horrors that flee do not generate any extra models for the unit. And then in match play, it goes on to tell you that you have to pay the points. So 1 pink horror, you pay the points for 2 blue horrors that you then turn around and put down a brimstone horror.
Yeah, I think, you know, even if it's not the best use of them, there's always that psychological thing to when you start doing that, that makes people want to just not shoot them, right? Like I've shot at horrors before back in the day, and that starts happening, and you're just like, you know what? Forget it. It ain't worth it. and go into something else. So, you know what? If you started to do that to me, and I'm not thinking, and I'm just kind of reacting to it, yeah, I might just stop shooting at them and just be like, yeah, whatever, dude, just you do you.
Well, if you see them, especially, you know, you see this unit start to snake its way towards something you don't want it being near.
Yeah, that's obnoxious. You remember people used to do that with Necrons.
You know, I mean, what if the situation came out to where you start to wall off a character or something?
Yeah.
That's about to get charged or potentially charged. I mean, I don't know. I think there's
better hope that they don't have a jump pack.
Yeah, there are things that there are 2 or 3 situations I think that would really be frustrating, be annoying enough to where. But the real point is that even if you never killed another horror, those reserve points aren't wasted.
Yeah, because you could always just bring something else in.
Summon in a Keeper of Secrets or something.
Yeah.
That is really annoying when you summon in a Keeper of Secrets on someone and then you get the charge off. That's good times.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the thing is it always ends up being it's situational, right? Like you can do it with them or not, or switch over and bring in what you need, and it almost lets you tailor your list on the fly. That's the cool thing about reserve points with demons, right? Because demons you can always just kind of pick and choose what you bring in. It basically gives you a sideboard that you can tweak your list during the game.
Summon in a 4th demon prince.
Yeah, can you?
I think so. I think you can't put a 4th demon prince in your army for match play, but I think you can summon it. You just can't summon the same name character over. Like you can't summon in 2 changelings or something. Yeah.
The only reason I asked that is because they ruled that you couldn't. Remember with the assassins, they FAQ'd that and said you can't put 3 Vindicares in a list and then summon in.
You may be. That's probably the one that should take precedent. I guess this is the point I'm trying to illustrate is that the points aren't lost. So you could plan on having, you know, 40 horrors that turn into, 80 blue horrors and then 80 brimstone horrors. If not, that's what I'm trying to do. I will have 40 horrors because if a unit goes as 20, then they get 3 shots instead of 2 shots. And I think the 20 model count keeps them into the still 1 command point to deep strike if you wanted to.
Yeah, and just a crap ton of horrors on the table when you have low volume of fire units that are just, you know, low volume, high strength shots. You know, you're just like, okay, cool. Yeah, that last cannon, you got a horror. Good for you.
You got a horror that just became 2 more models.
Yeah, it's like, proud of you, bro. Keep it up.
If you spend 1 command point, you set up your demon unit with a power level rating of 8 or less in the warp. And 10 is power level 4, 20 would be power level 8. I'm trying to create demon bombs. So I'm basically trying to create either the pink horror shooty bomb or bloodletter charge bombs. That's kind of the core of my list. And then throw in some a supreme command of some other chaos stuff. Or the disloyal 17 Give me some scoop some sweet command points.
You know, in my opinion, blood letters in the backfield never get old. Like that is always scary. You know, when you got your five guys, your scout squad somewhere or whatever, just sitting on an objective, and all of a sudden 10 blood letters appear in front of them. That's always scary. And what they charge, what, 3d6? Is that right?
You can take the banner. You give the banner, I believe, that lets them charge. And then I think the herald ability lets them reroll that charge.
When you summon them, can they have that?
I don't know.
I don't know either.
Yeah.
But that's scary.
I think you
just
have to pay the points, right? No. The stratagem stuff is, I think, pregame. So you can't give them a stratagem if you summon them. But anything you pay points for, you just pay the points.
Yeah. Any time I've had blood letters, because, you know, usually you got that unit that just doesn't put out a ton of shots or doesn't put out a ton of attacks or something sitting on a backfield. And then those blood letters are usually going to make the charge when they come.
The corn is banner of blood. It's a pregame thing before the game starts. So you couldn't do that for a unit that didn't exist if you summoned in them.
Right,
but I mean, I'm having blood letters in the list. So the idea is that I've got this, you know, against some armies, you plan on deep striking in the blood letters. Against some armies, you plan on deep striking the horrors. You know, I don't know. I haven't played this yet. I was basically just trying to tinker around with some demon stuff that they might be good in what the world looks like right now. I started thinking I don't hate this idea of summoning things in or summoning or placing them with the splits.
Yeah. And I think if you've got the models and you've got, I think you have to have a really good grasp of what your opponent's list is doing and what you need to do. I think it would be a really fun way to play the game, right? Of like what you bring in to counter what they have and how you're going to accomplish your goals. I think that's really neat. I don't think I have the situational awareness to play a list like that, but I like the idea of it. You know, as a concept, I like the idea of it. I don't think I could pull it off.
Well, see, I'm gonna do some testing this weekend. There's a few lists I want to test. One of them is a 3-drop Imperial Guard army.
What? Yeah. Why is that not what you're talking about? Let's talk about that for a second.
No, it's a little too out there. I don't know.
It's three. What's the transport? What's the Baneblade chassis? At the
three
transport?
Stormlords and about 15
Ogryn. So it's three Stormlords. Is that what it is?
Yeah. That's it. That's it. That is.
Yes. Run that. I will drive to Georgia right now and we will play that game.
You know, well, you got to think that, I mean, how do people get Killmore off of it? You know, like what?
Good luck with that.
I mean, look, this is just stuff that this is what you start thinking about when you're questioning every move you've ever made.
Yeah. In your death spiral, when eight destroyers come back, you're like, three.
Look, nothing gets around. Yeah, right. After the 11th destroyer comes back, you know what? This list needs more Shadow Sorcerer.
I need more Ogryns. This list could really use some Ogryn.
Which, coincidentally, would not save you versus 11 extra destroyers. Like, it's still there.
Not at all. Yeah, still, you're still going to lose some of that, but... I love it when you get in that dark place is when you always come up with these like just bonkers list ideas and you convince yourself that it's the hotness. Like this is going to do it. Right. But,
I've got a weekend of playtesting aside. I'm playing on Friday night and I'm playing on Saturday all during the day. And so how we test is, you know, we'll actually set up. This is what our deployment is. Okay, you just go first. Okay, I'll go first. You know, let's play the first couple of turns, and then we'll see what we think is going to happen past that. You know, and I highly encourage you, especially when you're thinking of gimmick list like the two we just mentioned. Do not go and purchase those models yet.
No, you better be using bottle caps, dice, poker chips. Something.
That's something I want to talk about next week is some of the comments that we've gotten is like, yo, Paul, we can't just go, you know, I can't go out and just get the army you described. I don't want you to. I want you to find it. We talk about stuff. I mean, granted, we're fanatics. We're probably going to have some of this. Or if we don't, it'll be two Baneblade chassis and a shoebox or something that we play with. But when we roll out to a tournament, it'll be that kind of stuff. But only after it's gone through the testing phase. So,
yeah, I mean, speak for yourself, Paul, but as a retailer, I definitely endorse you buying the three Banebelly chassis and all those Ogryn kits.
Dude, man. I mean, hobby on a budget. I completely respect it. I mean, so you should do these playtesting, and you should foster an environment that you can. Like, I'm not a hobby snob at the gaming table here in the house.
Yeah.
I get real snobbish the further I get away from the house.
Yeah. Like at a tournament.
The more snobbish, the more money you pay to get somewhere to play.
I think that's fair. Yeah. I don't want to drive all the way to Chicago and some guy's got his GI Joe's like glued to a 40 millimeter base. You know, that's just me. Yeah. But, you know, it's at home. Yeah.
Let's do it. It's tested. So these are a couple of things I'm going to be testing. We'll see how it goes. And I've got a couple other chaos builds. And also some guard builds.
Keep me in the loop on that. I honestly, my son would love, that many Ogryns on the table. He is obsessed with his Bulgryns. So he would be all about that.
That Bulgryn is what I'm talking about. Yeah, the guys with the slap shields.
Oh, absolutely. And there is nothing more infuriating than the snide look a 9-year-old gives you when he makes all of his slap shield saves. When you shoot him with your Black Knights, like, I'm shooting you with plasma. You should be dying. And they don't die.
They just stand there.
And he just looks at you like he's the king of Warhammer. And I don't like that. That's when you just tell them to go to their room.
Yeah, then they charge you and beat you down with those.
Yeah, you're grounded, son. Yeah. Now who's the winner?
Yeah, there you go. Well, guys, thanks for joining me and talking with me tonight. Finishing Moves will return next week. We'll be talking about the hobby segment around purchasing stuff and a hobby segment around painting stuff. I'm back on the horse painting, finally, you know, getting some projects moved out, some new stuff moved in. So looking forward to talking about it.
The endless circle.
That's it.
Yeah, next week I'll be a Battle Haven.
You'll want to hear the recap of that. Want to see some pictures up on the FTN Facebook.
Oh, you know it.
I've been looking forward
to this for a long time.
Yeah, it's an absolute stellar event. Guys, y'all have a good night. We'll speak next week.
Cheers.
Good night.
Handle the truth.